ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes, to the Jew first, and also to the Greek. What a wonderful message that God is reconciling human beings, not only to himself, but to one another, that in Messiah Yeshua, Jew and Gentile come together and we can truly be brothers and sisters in the faith. What a joyful and wonderful message. Romans 1:16 lets you know that you've tuned in to Jesus Made Me Kosher. We come to you live every day at about this same time, right here on Faith Talk 1500 WLQV. We're coming to you live today from the spacious and congenial studios here at Faith Talk 1500. And also we are joined by our man on the street in sunny San Diego, Rabbi Lauren Jacobs. Rabbi, welcome. How are you doing out there?
Good to be with you, Rabbi Glenn, but actually not so sunny in San Diego today. Gray, overcast, and a little bit cooler. I would say that it's probably close to the same temperature that it is in Metro Detroit today.
Well, in Metro Detroit today, it's sunny and about 49, 50 degrees. So, but we got a wind chill factor here, and of course, San Diego's by the sea also. So tell us a little bit about what's been going on at the Lausanne Consultation on Jewish Evangelism out there.
I would love to give everyone an update. Again, the Lausanne Consultation on Jewish Evangelism is a subset of this larger missionary movement, the the Lausanne Consultation on World Evangelism, and the Lausanne Consultation on Jewish Evangelism is a smaller subgroup and very active. I think it's maybe the most active part of the Lausanne Consultation on World Evangelism. And various papers are being presented and discussed. My brother-in-law, David Brickner, the executive director of Jews for Jesus, gave a tremendous paper last night talking about reconciliation between Jewish people and Arabs in the land of Israel, specifically Messianic Jews and evangelical Palestinian Christians. Even though we share the same faith, because of politics in the land of Israel, it gets complicated and difficult. There is another conference going on right now, Rabbi Glenn, in the land of Israel, sponsored by Palestinian Christians. They've invited Messianic Jewish scholars to present some papers, but there's been quite a bit of controversy because of this conference. And so we discussed that. Dave gave a great perspective, a godly perspective, that Messiah said, the world will know us by our love for one another. And Rabbi Glenn, it's easy to love when you all agree, but when you disagree and can still find areas of commonality, that's when the world will sit up and take notice. So that was a tremendous paper last night and challenge to us. We heard about the work of the Jerusalem Institute of Justice in Israel from John Myers. This is a great organization that is doing work with human rights in Israel, and particularly speaking up for the Messianic Jewish believers who often find themselves being persecuted to some degree, especially by the Ministry of the Interior that is targeting Messianic Jews. We just got a great media report from Susan Perlman, who also works with Jews for Jesus, talking about what's happening in the media the past year regarding Messianic Jews and Messianic Judaism. And a lot has been taking place in Israel and outside of Israel regarding Jews who believe in Jesus. So that was fascinating. And then this afternoon, we're going to get a paper, Was the Holocaust a Direct Judgment from God?
Whoa, boy.
Yeah. We're getting a lot of papers. The theme of this conference is the Holocaust, so we're getting a number of papers discussing Jewish missions, Jewish ministry in the light of the Holocaust, you know, after the Holocaust. And so that should be very interesting as well.
Wow, it sounds like a lot of stuff to consider going on there. And that's a very heavy topic. And certainly I hope there's a and I would imagine there will be a very clear distinction made when it comes to the Holocaust and the Jewish people, that there's a difference between Yeshua saying that our people would be exiled from the land of Israel and that Jerusalem would be trodden down. When Messiah says that himself, you know that that's from God. But the Holocaust, that's the wickedness of man. So I'm sure that there's going to be some distinctions made.
Yeah, the wickedness of man, but also I think, you know, from where I'm coming from, those warnings in Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28, the blessings and the cursings for disobedience to God.
Right.
And, you know, I do believe that the exile from the land of Israel and our subsequent wanderings among the nations and the sufferings we have experienced, which I, including the Holocaust, are in part due to, you know, not recognizing the time of our visitation and the consequences. So that's where I'm at on that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, it sounds like very heady stuff going on out there. And certainly we at Shema look forward to you being back with us this coming Shabbat. Fill us in a little bit on that. And of course, Rabbi Lauren and I would be remiss if we didn't invite you, our Faith Talk 1500 audience, to come and join us for Purim, the Feast of Esther, this coming Saturday morning at Shema. It's let's just say it's not our normal service. It's of course joyful like our services normally are, but there's just an added element of, wow, God preserved our people in spite of efforts to destroy us, and we want to let our hair down, as it were, and just really celebrate the Lord with abandon.
Rabbi Glenn, there's nothing like a Shema Purim service.
That's right. Well, Rabbi Lauren, thanks so much for reporting in from San Diego, and trusting that you'll be able to manage that suffering for the Lord out there just a couple more days.
Amen. Thank you, Rabbi Glenn. God bless you.
All right. Thanks, Rabbi Lauren. Well, folks, today we're going to do a couple of things in our limited time. I want to continue talking about the land of Israel and what the Christian attitude towards Israel ought to be. And I want to take it also into another aspect, and that is we've got a presidential election cycle in the midst. And come November, we're going to be casting our votes. Now, for me personally, the issue of the sanctity of human life at every stage is issue number one, and always will be, followed very closely, I should say, by a candidate's true position on how they feel about Israel and how supportive are they of Israel. We can all agree that not everything Israel does is right. And we're not talking about having like this 100% track record. What we're talking about is support for Israel and recognizing Israel's sovereignty and its right to defend itself as it sees fit. You know, politicians will say whatever they have to say sometimes to get elected, but it's what's really more telling is what a person's actions are. Anyway, so, and here's the other thing. We have a short show, but if you feel strongly about this issue, Israel and the land and what the Christian response ought to be, and especially how you're going to be voting in November relative to that, if you promise to keep your comments brief, we'd like to open the phone lines to you. The number is 866-423-9578. Again, that's 866-423-9578. If you feel like calling, otherwise I'll be sharing with you some of my thoughts. The first thing I want to share with you is this. Psalm 137, verses 1 through 6, talks about the peace of Jerusalem and the desire that Jerusalem always be secure. It says, by the rivers of Babylon, right, when our people were exiled, by the rivers of Babylon, there we sat down and wept when we remembered Zion. Upon the willows and the midst of it, we hung our harps. For there our captors demanded of us songs, and our tormentors mirth, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. How can we sing the Lord's song in a foreign land? If I forget you, O Jerusalem, may my right hand forget her skill. May my tongue cling to the roof of my mouth if I do not remember you, if I do not exalt Jerusalem above my chief joy. Jerusalem should be first in our affections. Psalm 122, verse 6, enjoins us to pray that there would always be peace there. Sha'alu shalom Yerushalayim. Pray for, literally petition for the peace of Jerusalem. May they prosper that love you. Friends, do you know how many times Jerusalem is mentioned in the Tanakh, the Old Testament scriptures? Jerusalem, by name, is mentioned over 800 times in the Old Testament. You know how many times the city of Jerusalem is mentioned by name in the Quran? Zero. It's mentioned once in an oblique way, talking about the farther mosque. That's about it. 800 times in the Old Testament, in the Jewish scriptures, Jerusalem is mentioned. Jerusalem should be important to us. The safety and the well-being of Israel should be important to us. And, of course, Jewish people have been present in that land going all the way back, well, if you want to go back to the time of Abraham, but, you know, for argument's sake, let's say to the time of Joshua and the conquest. That's about 1400 B.C. We're talking 3,500 years. Do you know when the first Arabic presence, the first Islamic presence? 8th century A.D. So now, and that's if you want to argue that way. Well, who's there first? You know, and I don't even want to go there, because I'm going to argue based on Psalm 24, verse 1, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. And so consequently, the earth is God's and everything in it. He gives it and apportions it as he sees fit. In Ezekiel 5:5 and Deuteronomy 32:8, God makes it very clear that he gave Israel to the Jewish people. In fact, Israel and Jerusalem were to be the center of the earth and should be the center of our affections. So I want to talk about that, because Israel, this little tiny land, this barely the size of New Jersey, yet over that little tiny piece of real estate, the earth is in uproar. The nations rage, the people's devise vain things. So want to talk about that, and want to talk about President Obama's record on Israel. And, of course, we're going to take your calls if you want to call in. It's 866-423-9578, which corresponds to 866-423-WLQV. Let's go to Pat in Ferndale. Pat, welcome to Jesus Made Me Kosher.
Well, first of all, what a privilege it is to listen to your program, and I thank you for your journey. I've known you for many years. As a Gentile who is grafted into the kingdom of Jesus Christ and being a true Jew because my heart is circumcised, I thank you for sharing the Word of God. I'm always amazed over the years as I've talked to my Christian brothers and sisters who are not Jewish, who I don't want to say have an arrogance, but really have a neglect of the fact that it is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the Jew first, God's love for Israel, the Jewish feasts and tabernacles that Jesus certainly fulfilled. And there's just such a lack or even a heart to understand that we were grafted in, okay?
Yeah, you know, Pat, it's sort of, I think this is what Rabbi Paul was alluding to in Romans chapters 9, 10, and 11. You know, it's so easy to say, well, the Jewish people blew it. They rejected the Messiah. They're out. They were exiled, expelled from the land. They're done. And, you know, as though anticipating that kind of spiritual hostility towards the Jewish people, Paul warns Christians, listen, don't be arrogant toward the natural branches. The same God who cut them off can graft them back in. And if you think he's the kind of God that breaks covenant with people the first time they mess up, then you're no more secure in the new covenant than they were in that first covenant. And yet it seems to me, Pat, that large swaths of the body of Christ are ignoring the clear admonition of Romans 9, 10, and 11 that we not be arrogant towards the natural branches. And, you know, I'll be the first to say, you know, we're not expected to agree with everything that Israel's doing. Nevertheless, there should be an overarching support and love and, may I add, prayers for intercession for both the people and the land of Israel. What say you?
Well, I absolutely thank you for speaking the truth of the Word of God, because then we err from doctrine and truth. And I, as I said, I've always been amazed in my journey here. I had the privilege of sitting under Haskell Stone's teaching years ago as an early Christian, and we as born-again believers in Jesus Christ have to have a heart for Israel. And there's something lacking in our heart, an abandonment of truth. And I think also we understand that prophetic is centered in the nation of Israel.
That's right.
And how interesting is the news parallels the prophetic. This tiny nation has the capacity to bring all the nations into issue. But
You know, Pat, forgive me. It's just we've got to be close on our time. But you're quite correct, and I certainly thank you for it, that. There is a prophetic aspect of this. Zechariah has foretold all the things that are going to be taking place, and I hope, Pat, that you'll be voting with that. You know, at least part of your thinking when it goes to. When you go to vote in November. So, Pat, thank you very much for your call. Now, folks, we're going to continue on, and I want to talk to you a little bit about President Obama and his record on Israel. Now, when he was a senator campaigning for president, then-Senator from Illinois Obama made all kinds of great promises, most especially when he appeared before AIPAC, the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, appearing before AIPAC and lobbying for the Jewish vote. Here's some clips, and Steve's going to put them up for us, of some of the things that then-Senator Obama said regarding Israel.
And I know that when I visit AIPAC, I'm among friends. Good friends. Friends who share my strong commitment to make sure that the bond between the United States and Israel is unbreakable today, unbreakable tomorrow, unbreakable forever. That the bond between Israel and the United States is rooted in more than our shared national interests. It's rooted in the shared values and shared stories of our people. And as president, I will work with you to ensure that it is this bond that is strengthened. We know that the establishment of Israel was just and necessary, rooted in centuries of struggle and decades of patient work. But 60 years later, we know that we cannot relent, we cannot yield, and as president, I will never compromise when it comes to Israel's security. Those who threaten Israel threaten us. Israel has always faced these threats on the front lines. And I will bring to the White House an unshakable commitment to Israel's security. That starts with ensuring Israel's qualitative military advantage. I will ensure that Israel can defend itself from any threat. From Gaza to Tehran, defense cooperation between the United States and Israel is a model of success, and it must be deepened. As president, I will implement a memorandum of understanding that provides $30 billion in assistance to Israel over the next decade, investments to Israel's security that will not be tied to any other nation.
Wow, those are grand promises. Now, note that President, then-Senator Obama, promised that, first thing, he affirmed that the establishment of the nation of Israel was just. Did you catch that? He said it was just. Well, did you know that the Palestinians and the Arab nations surrounding Israel refer to that day as Nakba, the tragedy, the catastrophe? Well, President Obama said that the founding of the nation of Israel was just. So then why does he and other members of this democratically controlled administration and the various Arab nations that hate Israel, why do they keep calling it an occupation, as though Israel took over something that wasn't theirs and it's unjust? You call something an occupation when it's unjust. How can this man speak out of one side of his mouth at AIPAC and say the founding of the nation of Israel was just, and then turn around and speak to Abbas and other Arabic leaders and agree with them that this is actually an occupation? And how is it that this senator from Illinois promises that as president, he's going to strengthen the ties with Israel? And what does he do? He disses Prime Minister Netanyahu. Perhaps you'll remember that in March of 2010, Benjamin Netanyahu visited the United States. This head of government came to the White House. And usually when a head of state visits the White House, there's always a photo op. There's an official handshake. It's very ceremonious, and it's supposed to be that way. So what happens? He was treated in March of 2010. Prime Minister Netanyahu was treated with the kind of humiliation never before seen. He was in a talk with President Obama. They couldn't agree on things. President Obama was trying to extract concessions on the building of settlements, and Netanyahu wasn't going for it. And so what happens? Obama storms out of the room and goes off and has a private dinner with his family. Didn't invite Netanyahu to sit down and have a meal together. Didn't even provide for them to have a meal. Didn't invite set anything up, just left him hanging there in the room. It was just terrible. No head of state has ever been treated with that kind of contempt at the White House. So how can this man say on the one hand he wants to build relations and then treat Prime Minister Netanyahu that way? Now, you may also remember that May of last year, President Obama gave a speech calling for a reinstating of 1967 borders in Israel as part of the establishment of a Palestinian state. Any of you who've studied a little bit of Middle Eastern geography would know that those pre-1967 borders were utterly and completely indefensible. There is just absolutely no way that Israel could even defend itself. So, Steve, let's play clip number 9, if we could, because President Obama, then Senator Obama, said that Israel's security should be sacrosanct. Well, here it is from his own lips.
Now, let me be clear. Israel's security is sacrosanct. It is non-negotiable. The Palestinians need a state. The Palestinians need a state that is contiguous and cohesive, and that allows them to prosper. But any agreement with the Palestinian people must preserve Israel's identity as a Jewish state with secure, recognized, defensible borders. And Jerusalem will remain the capital of Israel, and it must remain undivided.
Wow. Jerusalem is the capital of the Jewish people and must remain so and undivided. Wow. Grandiose talk for a senator candidating for president, but his actions in office have been anything but that. You may also recall that President Obama, not realizing that he and French President Nicolas Sarkozy were still on microphone, in November of last year had this little exchange where Sarkozy says to Obama, "I can't stand Netanyahu. He's such a liar." And Obama says, "Oh, you think that's bad? I have to deal with him every day." They didn't realize they were on mic. And then they tried to swear the reporters there to secrecy about it. Yeah, that was really going to work. This president has more contempt for the people and the nation of Israel than any president since the refounding of Israel in 1948. And that's not hyperbole. That is just a fact, because rhetoric means absolutely nothing. It's what a person's actions are, and it's clear that this president has nothing but contempt for Prime Minister Netanyahu, for the security of the nation Israel. But let me tell you something. Expect him to start speaking in those glowing, warm, fuzzy terms as we get nearer and nearer to November. And don't you be hoodwinked. A man is not defined by his words. He's defined by his actions. And every time President Obama has pressed for Israel to make concessions about building new homes, new settlements, it just shows his contempt for the land and for the people. And folks, this is really important. This is just not just an issue that's on Rabbi Glenn's heart. This should be one of your keystone issues when it comes to casting your ballot in November. The sanctity of life should be a number one. And national security should be right up there. And the security and the welfare of the nation of Israel should be right up there, because God says, I will bless those who bless the seed of Abraham, and I will curse those who curse the seed of Abraham. You know, Zechariah chapters 12 and 14 talks about all the nations of the world gathering to attempt to annihilate Jerusalem and Israel, all the nations of the world. And, you know, I fear because that means the U.S. is included in that, all the nations of the world. Well, you know, there's nothing we can necessarily do about what our elected representatives choose to do once they're in office. But folks, you and I have a choice about who we elect to office. And I hope the welfare of the nation and the people of Israel will be utmost in your thinking during that time. Well, it's been a very quick half hour, but we're always delighted to be with you. So on behalf of Rabbi Lauren and me and everybody at Congregation Shema Yisrael, want to thank you for listening in today. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow. We're going to have a great interview on Jesus Made Me Kosher. And from all of us, we want to say to you, Shalom, Shalom.
Jesus Made Me Kosher is sponsored by Congregation Shema Yisrael, a community of Messianic Jews and kosher-hearted Gentiles who serve the three-in-one God of Israel. You can find us on the web at shema.com. That's S-H-E-M-A.com. If you'd like more information or have questions, you can also reach us by phone at 248-593-5150. That's 248-593-5150. To hear how Jesus can make you kosher, join us every weekday at 3:30 right here on Faith Talk 1500.